In this part of Jacob's life, there are two big events. There's him fleeing from home, because through his deceptions, the pressure of his mother, he's no longer safe. Brother wants to kill him, so he flees. God meets with him there, Genesis 28. Then the second pole in this part of his life is when he returns, 20 years later. And that's what we're reading about here. So he's 20 years older. He left as a single man with nothing. He's coming back with big family, tons of stuff, really a very wealthy man. But there's this great issue, Esau. Does he still hate him? Is he still in danger? He's got a promise from God. God has said he should go home. He's having to trust God, but full of anxiety, full of doubt, and that's what's happening. So that's the bit of Jacob's life we're talking about. It's 20 years after he fled. Now he's returning as a wealthy man. Now we've got two big ideas that we're talking about every morning. One, that relationships are really important and we're not very good at them. Our culture doesn't help us, so we need to work at them. So we talked yesterday about one of the reasons why our relationships can be difficult, and that's because of our idolatry. We fix on someone or we fix on something and we elevate it and we make it too important, and it distorts all our other relationships, and it distorts our emotions and sets new priorities and new definitions of success and failure, takes control of our lives, and there's collateral damage then in every relationship. So that was yesterday morning. Today I still want to talk about relationships, and but I want to talk about the flip side of that, how they can be fixed when they're broken. You know, that's the great thing about God, is that he redeems. And no situation is beyond hope. It's very important to realize that. We are talking about God. There is nothing that he cannot do. So that's relationships, and that's where we still are this morning. And then the rest of the week, we're going to start thinking about the second big idea, which is the one relationship. And that's foundational to it all, our relationship to God. So talking about our relationships this morning and how to fix them. So, how do you fix them then? Well, the most important thing, it's not a total solution. It's not just add water and all your problems are solved. It's not instant. But the most important component in healthy relationships and in restoring broken relationships, the most important thing is the capacity to forgive. And so that's what I want us to talk about today. There is this broken relationship between twin brothers, Esau and Jacob. And what we're thinking about today is that how that relationship is mended. And particularly how that speaks into our lives. So forgiveness is our theme. First thing I want to say is that forgiveness is really needed. People do us wrong, don't they? People do unfair things. People say things about us that are unfair. They break our confidence or they make up stuff. They do things to us. And there's no doubt here that Jacob has wronged Esau. He was under a bit of pressure from his mother the second time, but not the first time, particularly perhaps. And he has wronged Esau. He has treated him badly. He's exploited him because Esau's not too bright emotionally and relationally, and he managed to steal his birthright from him. And then there's been this horrendous deception when he stole his father's blessing. So there's no doubt that Jacob has wronged Esau. And you know what? We could stop at this moment, I think, and probably all tell our stories of how somebody somewhere has been a Jacob to us. Somebody somewhere has wronged us. All I'm trying to say is the forgiveness is not a theoretical issue. It's a live issue. Things are happening to us, big things perhaps in our life that really shape our lives. And the only way we're ever going to come to terms with them, the only ever way we're ever going to handle them is if we learn to forgive. But, you know, not just the big things, but at an everyday, ordinary level, there's a sort of more common or garden forgiveness that needs to be there. So people wrong us. We need to forgive. And I guess that's not controversial. We all know that. But there is another side to that. And this is the one we sort of forget. Not only do people wrong us, but we wrong others. Sometimes unintentionally, but not often. Sometimes deliberately. This forgiveness thing, in other words, is not one-way traffic. It's not, well, I'm the great victim. You know, our culture encourages us to think of ourselves as victims and to always be very aware of our rights and the way people trample on our rights. And it sort of blanks out the idea that we have responsibilities also and privileges, and that we sometimes trample on others. And so as we think about the fact we need forgiveness, what I want to emphasize as we start is it is needed. We need to receive it as well as give it. Okay. So what I'm saying is that I'm not talking here about something that one day in your life you might need. I'm talking about everyday activity. This is something which has got to be constant at a low level. The capacity to overlook things, the capacity to forgive things, the ability to ask, well, I'm sorry about that. The ability just to be sensitive at that level. And then there's the big issues like this one, which are much greater, and maybe they're harder to forgive and need a little bit more work and what have you. That's my first point. This is a live issue. It's needed. Okay, first thing. Second thing, it's hard. Forgiveness is hard. And there's lots of reasons why that's true. And I'll think about a few more general ones in a minute. But there's one here which comes out of the Esau thing and comes out of the text. So I do want to draw attention to that particularly. It's in chapter 27 and verse 41. So way back when these twin brothers lived in the same household, and just at the moment where Esau realizes that Jacob has stolen his blessing. And verse 41 tells us the story. And this is what it says. So this is chapter 27, verse 41. Esau held a grudge. In the reading we had, the New King James, it said Esau hated Jacob. But Esau held a grudge against Jacob because of the blessing his father had given to him. And he said to himself, it's always dangerous to talk to yourself. Well, not always. Depends what you're saying, doesn't it? But he said to himself, and this is dark, the days of mourning for my father are near. Then I will kill my brother Jacob. So there's Esau's reaction to the wrong. Not forgiveness, but revenge. So he's holding a grudge against Jacob because of what Jacob has done. And so he decides, look, I'll hold off till the old man's gone. But when the old man's gone, Jacob's a dead man. And Esau was used to killing things. Remember Esau, the great big Bear Grylls type guy. And then Rebekah hears this. This is the next verse, verse 42. And verse 42 is her commentary, her talking about what Esau is thinking. So when Rebekah was told what her older son Esau had said, she sent for her younger son Jacob and said to him, and she's going to give him a plan, but it's the first phrase I'm interested in. She said this, your brother Esau is consoling himself. This is the phrase. He is consoling himself with the thought of killing you. Now, that is about as dark as it gets. That is chilling. Because she's revealing here the dynamic in Esau. And she's revealing the sort of dynamic that a grudge, that hatred, that resentment, that the desire for revenge can actually have. And what she's saying is that actually Esau is consoling himself with the thought of revenge. So Esau has just been wronged. There's been this injustice done to him. He's had his birthright stolen and then his blessing stolen. He's lost that, the most important thing in his life. How is he coping with this injustice? What is his strategy for managing the anger that he feels and the frustration that he feels? He is consoling himself. He's drawing strength from the thought of killing him, of revenge. And what I'm trying to draw out there is that hate can make you strong. And not forgiving can have the effect of enabling you to cope with this crisis. That's what's happening here. How is Esau coping? Well, he's coping because his desire for revenge, his plan to kill, is a resource. And he's drawing strength. You know, that word consoling is quite a scary word to use because it's the same word that Psalm 23 uses to describe the comfort of God's rod and staff. In Psalm 23, the psalmist says, when I'm walking through the valley of the shadow of death, I am comforted. I draw strength from the fact that you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Same word. So he's drawing strength here. He's finding help here, but not from something positive like the presence of God. He's drawing strength here from darkness, from hatred. He's drawing strength from the grudge. And it's interesting that, isn't it? And scary. Hate can make you strong, but you know, it may enable you to cope, but only at a terrible price. You know, hate is a very corrosive thing, very destructive thing. And we know this in our culture. First week of the school holidays, I was on holiday in Pembrokeshire in the rain in a caravan with six of us. So, to keep ourselves sane, we had brought some DVDs. I'm not sure if this is how you keep yourself sane, but we sat down and two straight evenings we watched six Star Wars films. The whole set. I mean, the whole set. And I've not seen them. Actually, like Adam, Star Wars, I saw that as a seven-year-old when I was seven. It was the first film I ever saw in the cinema. I'm quite pleased about that. And the last, actually. No, not the last. But I hadn't watched most of them. So we sat down and watched it all. And what a scary story. Here's this really nice kid at the beginning. Anakin. What lovely kid. Well, slightly irritating, but, you know, nice kid. And he turns into this monster. And he's redeemed at the end. You know, it's funny, isn't it? How every great story is a sort of a copy of the gospel. It's always got to have redemption there. It's always got to have redemption by love. Now, that's an echo of the gospel, the story, and it's everywhere in our culture. But what I was interested to see was when Anakin is being turned into... Oh, has everybody seen it? This is a real plot. Spoiler alert, right? Fingers in your ears if you haven't seen it. But when Anakin is about to turn into, just in case you don't know that happens, the really bad guy who looks really friendly and grandfatherly, what's his name? Somebody, whoever, Palpatine. Oh, you're an expert. Palpatine. Okay. As he's the baddie who's trying to corrupt him, and he uses the same concept. He says, he tries to provoke him to hate. He says, strike me down, I'm your enemy, hate me, hate me. And then he says something at some point, I know because I Googled it this morning, hate will make you strong. Your hate is making you strong. And that's what's happening here to Esau. His hate is making him strong, enabling to cope with this injustice. But the Star Wars story is, yes, hate makes you strong, but it dehumanizes you as well. Turns you into a monster. Turns you into Darth Vader. So, if you'd come to Esau at that moment and said, you know what, Esau, you need to forgive him. you might have got a lot of bad language back from him, I don't know. But he wouldn't have been able to do it. Why? Because the hate was how he was coping. The hate was making him strong. That's how he was surviving this huge injustice. Let's not be too hard on Esau here. This wrong has been done. He's trying to survive it. He's trying to cope with it. And this thought of vengeance is what's enabling him to do that. Now, if you're in that situation, you can't forgive somebody because how will you cope? Where will you get the strength? It's your resentment that gives you strength. If you let that go, which happens when you forgive. So I suppose what I'm trying to point out is there's always a cost to forgiveness. You know, when a wrong has been committed, we instinctively know, because we're made in the image of God, we instinctively know there's a price to be paid. So when there's a wrong done, we say, right, who's going to pay? We do that. That's just a reflex. It's because we live in a moral universe that's been created by a moral God, and we are made in his image. So we know that where there's a wrong, there must be an atonement. There must be a price paid. And another reason forgiveness is so hard, a more general one, is that if you've had a wrong done against you and then you decide to forgive, what you're really saying is, well, I know this person did it, but I'm not going to ask them to pay. And actually what you're saying to yourself is, I'll pay. So you've already had the pain of having it done to you, and then you're going to forgive this person, so actually you're sort of going to pay twice, because you're not going to be able to let it all out on this person or see them get what they deserve. You're going to suck it up yourself. And that means you end up paying twice. You suffered the first time when they did it to you, and then if you forgive them, you sort of suffer a second time. That's another reason why forgiveness is so hard. Because if they're not going to bear the cost, then as you forgive them, you're going to bear it. So maybe my second point is, has got the wrong title. I said forgiveness is hard. Maybe I should have said forgiveness is unthinkable. Maybe I should have said it's impossible. Well, before we leave this and get a bit more positive, I just want to point one thing out. You know, if forgiveness, you put it this way, what might help us here is this: you will never be more like God than when you choose to forgive. When you choose to pay, not just once because of the wrong done, but when you choose to pay twice as you forgive the person who did it. Because that's exactly the choice God has made with you, isn't it? With me. We've wronged him. I've wronged him. And so God's choice was either I make them pay, or I'll pay myself. And the gospel is that he chose the latter. The gospel is that he came and he literally paid himself on the cross and took our sins. Third point. We've said forgiveness is needed. We've said forgiveness is hard. And I've said maybe unthinkable. Third thing I want to point out, and here we come back to the story, is that actually forgiveness is wonderful. Wonderful. And what I want us to get at this point is a sense of that. I don't know if I can, we might not get that, but that's what I'm going for. Wonderful. I want you to see chapter 33 again and see what a wonderful situation this is. So Jacob has run after his deception. That's back in chapter 28. He's gone 400 miles. He's gone. And over 20 years, he's built a new life. So he's got 12 children. He's got great wealth. But at the same time, he's separate from his family. And in our culture, that's a shame. But in a traditional culture, a tribal culture, that's massive. That's big. You know, that's why it was important that he still went to the wider family. You know, you had to belong to the tribe. But to be separated from the tribe, that was a big deal. But he's had to do this. And so now after 20 years, he's coming back and he's got a promise from God saying you should go back, but he doesn't really know what's coming. He doesn't know. And as he gets closer to home, I mean, can you put yourself in his shoes? 20 years ago, his brother was trying to kill him. And what he's really coming to do now is to find out whether he still wants to kill him. And he knows Esau could kill him. He knows there's no... So he's coming back. And he's not sure what's coming. So he sends people ahead. And he sends great gifts ahead of livestock and all that. And he sends messengers with these gifts. And the messengers come back. And what do they say to him? They say, okay, did you find Esau? Yeah, we found Esau. Boy, did we find Esau. Did you tell him? Did you tell him I was coming? Did you tell him all about the gift? Yeah, we told him you were coming. So what's happened? What's happened? He's coming. Okay, so tell me more. He's coming. Yeah, he's coming. He's coming. He's got 400 men with him. 400 men with him. And this is bad news. And Jacob, who's sort of struggling to hold on to the promise of God here that he should return, and the reality that he now perceives, which is the brother who's sworn to kill him coming for him with 400 men. And chapter 32 gives us his response. Verse 7, he's terrified. Great fear and distress comes upon him. And his intelligence and his quick thinking kicks in. He divides up his household, thinking that, well, if he attacks one, then maybe the other group will escape. And then, verse 7, Jacob does something he's probably never done. He prays. We'll think about this in a couple of days' time. He prays. I don't know, can you feel the horror of this? Have you ever seen somebody utterly fall apart? And despair of life. And that's what's happening to Jacob here. Here's the guy who's always got an answer. He's always got a solution. He's always got a plan. Today, he's got no plan. And he's looking at his children. He's looking at his family. And he is pretty sure by the end of the day, they're going to be dead. And it's his own brother that's going to slaughter them. And it's his fault. Because of his stupidity, it's because of his greed, it's because of his pride, and it's all gonna end in a bloodbath in the desert. That's what he thinks is gonna happen. And I don't know, can you feel the horror of it? It's here's a man unraveling. You know, he's been building. You know, he spent 20 years looking over his shoulder, and now the past is catching up with him. And destruction, you know, 20 years of fear, 20 years of guilt, it's all coming to a head. And the Jacob we meet here is not swaggering anymore. Jacob is a man at his wit's end. And he's looking at his children. And he thinks they're about to die. And he's saying to himself, I have brought this upon them. Then we're missing a few bits, but then jump to chapter 33. Verse 1, Jacob looked up, and there, it's early in the morning, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. Okay, this is the moment of truth. There's nothing else I can do. He gets up, and he comes toward you. He starts bowing before Esau, and seven times he bows as he approaches his brother. And I don't know what happens. Does the brother break into a run as he recognizes Jacob? Does he run towards him? I don't know, what's Jacob looking for? Is he expecting, as Esau runs and the men behind him, is he expecting a sword to flash as Esau draws it from its sheath? What's he expecting? And yet these are the best verses in the Bible. Verse 4, but Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him. And they wept. I think it's one of the most beautiful verses in the Bible. They wept. They wept for their sins. They wept for their hate. They wept for their mother. They wept for their father. They wept for 20 wasted years, years of guilt and hate and fear. And suddenly, in one wonderful moment of reconciliation, all of that evaporates. There is forgiveness. And it's like a resurrection. It's life from the dead. Not just for Jacob, but for Jacob's family. They were under this death sentence. He's been under a death sentence for 20 years. These children have been born under Esau's death sentence. And now all of that is lifted and all of that is gone. It's like a resurrection. You know, it's wonderful. Now, I don't know about your life, and I don't know about who needs forgiving in your life by you, or who you need to seek forgiveness from in your life. Thinking now about the bigger scale. But what I'm hoping is that from this story, you'll at least see that that would be wonderful. Even if you can't yet come to the point where you could forgive or could ask for forgiveness, that at least you'd say, well, it would be wonderful if there was forgiveness. And at least want it. That's what I'm after. So that's the third point. It's a wonderful thing. It's life from the dead when there is forgiveness. Now I got one last point. Last point is that forgiveness is possible. I've said it's needed. I've said it's hard. I've said it's wonderful. Now the last thing is, it is possible. It is possible. How is it possible? Well, there's things we could say. 20 years have passed. People mature. Maybe that's it. You could say a few other things. But you know, there's one sure and certain way to forgive. And actually, the only guaranteed way a person can be enabled to forgive is if they themselves are forgiven. You look again at Esau, look at him running to meet Jacob and embracing him, throwing his arms around his neck and kissing him. How can he do that? How can he do that to the man who stole so much? After all that Jacob had done, how could Esau do that? Or more to the point, because this is what we're asking, how could I do it? How could you do it? You know, the only way is to realize that someone much greater than I has already done that for me. Think of yourself. Put yourself here. I'm going to use the first person. Put yourself here. There is someone that I have wronged. I took what was his, and I made it my own. I owed him love, I owed him respect, I owed him time and energy, but I've not given it. And I lived that way for years. You know, but one day I came to my senses. I looked around me, I saw I was living in a pigsty, and I returned from the far country, and I didn't have any gift to bring. Didn't know what was going to happen. I'm coming now back to my Father, back to God. And do you know what happened? He saw me far off and he ran to meet me and he threw his arms around me, embraced me, put a ring on my finger, a robe around me, shoes on my feet, gave me a seat at the table, reinstated me, forgave freely, instantly, completely, reinstated me into the family. If you're a Christian, that is your story. You may have different episodes and cut it up a different way and tell it a different way, but that is your story. It's the story of much bigger crimes than anyone has ever committed against you, and a free forgiveness that God himself, the highest authority, has freely given for Jesus' sake. Now, you know that, don't you? Everyone here knows that. If that is just the thing that you know that's for Sundays, the church is about, or it's the thing that gets you to heaven, even if it's really real, but it's something that's there to do with me and God, if it's just a thing, part of your life, if it's just a thing, that's not going to help you forgive anyone. And you're going to have the same struggles and need to use the same methods that the rest of the world uses to try and reconcile and get on. But you know, it's meant to be bigger than that for us. You know, not just I am forgiven, but it's meant to be our identity, our story. So if somebody says, well, who are you? What's the deep thing? What's the bottom? What's the essence of who you are? What's your identity? Well, that identity needs to be, I'm the man God forgave. It needs to be forgiveness. If you live in the story whereby you forfeited it all and ought to be in hell, and you are no longer in hell, but you are a child of God on your way to heaven, expecting resurrection because of Jesus and what he has done. That identity is a powerful thing. It means you are utterly secure. It means you know who you are. It means you have resources. The joy, the acceptance you have from God enables you to be magnanimous. It enables you to forgive others. But it has to be an identity. It's not enough just to be a sort of a vague Christian thing, but my identity is my music or my work or where I live and where I'm from or my whatever it is. That's not it. You can't be something our culture gives us, this identity, that identity. It can't be something you make up for yourself. It has to, if you have a gospel identity of forgiveness, of reconciliation, that's the thing that makes it possible. It doesn't necessarily make it easy, but it does make it possible. Okay. I run out of notes, which is always a good place to stop. I don't always stop there, but it's usually wise. So we've been talking now about the relationships around us, and we've said two things. Yesterday we talked about how they can be distorted when something becomes too important. Now today we've talked about how they can be restored. And that's only through forgiveness, which is a wonderful thing. And it's only possible when we ourselves are so conscious of our own forgiveness.